This episode of the Tabletop Submarine Podcast is produced by Cake Pie Games. Cake Pie Games, games that are a piece of cake to set up and easy as pie to teach.
Welcome to the Tabletop Submarine, where we dive a little bit deeper into why we love board games. Strap in and prepare for a deep sea adventure. Here are your hosts.
Voyagers, people who like board games, people who like role-playing games, people who like war games, and people who like eating various kinds of delicious food from the sea. Welcome to the Tabletop Submarine Podcast. It is I, Josh, your host, and with me is my co-host, who I always try to keep on his toes.
That's me. I'm Andrew, and today's special guest is Eleni, the Cardboard Rhino from CGE. Very excited to have her here. She is responsible for this awesome documentary series about the making of board games. Eleni, welcome to the show.
Hi, you guys. Hi, Andrew. Hi, Josh. Thank you for having me here, and for the nice intro that you made. Like, I'm wearing different hats, I think. But yeah, the most recent thing is a documentary, and I don't know if you guys have seen it at all, but yeah, it's the biggest thing I've done lately, so I'm very happy that some people have seen it.
It's a gargantuan undertaking. It's like, what, 15 parts? I mean, I think part 4 just came out as of this recording. You're also a YouTube star, so you've got that huge YouTube channel and all those followers, and you're doing playthroughs, and you're doing reviews, and I always see you at conventions doing the booths and running around doing special events and stuff like that, so you're a pretty big deal around here for those who don't know. I don't know how they don't know, but if they don't know, that's you. So this documentary started as a way to share your love of board games, is that correct?
Yes. So, like you said, that there's a lot of parts. And initially, I just wanted to do a simple thing for CGE because, like, I don't know if people know that I'm one of the content creators at CGE, like full-time making YouTube videos. And initially, we wanted to do a thing to celebrate CGE becoming 15 years old. And that was last year, actually. So I thought, okay, I'll do something about that. And then, you know, it became like this much bigger thing that took like a year to make. So we launched this at the 16th year of CG. And it's about all the stories behind all the board games. Because like initially CG had no intention of, you know, the people who started CG, they didn't want to start a publishing house. It just happened. And they, in fact, wanted to find a publisher, a proper publisher, to publish Vladia's game for the ages. So this is how it all started. And I think there's a lot of interesting stories in that and after that as well. So as a, you know, anniversary celebration, I wanted to make something that, you know, gives you an inside look into how games are made. And to get to know the people behind the board games, because that's not really easily seen through, you know, third-party videos of reviews and stuff like that. So I wanted to give the people, you know, this this opportunity and to get to know them. They're really nice people, actually.
I've seen the first two. I'm in halfway through the third, and I really agree with you. I feel like I am getting to know them, getting to see them, get to hear them talk, and hear them share their passion. It's really, really wonderful. How many are there going to be in this series?
Yeah, so yes, I think I see the end of the tunnel. Initially, we wanted to make 4. Now they're 8. So we have published 5, so there's 3 more to go. And I think now we're nearing the end of the series. I think around the date this podcast is airing. And the last episode is, of course, with the most recent games because I take it like chronologically. So Lost Ruins of Arnak and the rest after that, like Deal with the Devil, Starship Captains, and so on. And Kutnahora, which is the latest one. Yeah, so it became a lot bigger than I thought initially. A lot of work I didn't know how to handle, but it all came together in the end. And yeah, I'm very happy that, you know, there's episodes people can watch, and everything went well.
Sounds like you took this undertaking the same way they did board game design. Just jump in and do it and see what happens and follow the road of paths.
Exactly. And not taking into account any, you know, timelines or deadlines. It's, yeah, that's probably me fitting in with CGE.
So what was your favorite part about doing this documentary then? Like, what stands out to you throughout this process and journey?
Basically, I like how each story is complemented by another person's view. Like, usually quite funny seeing the different perspectives on things. And I quite enjoyed taking like one part of the story from one person, then the next continues the story, and how like it becomes a more, you know, a group sort of story, group tale, or reminiscing, you know, all these nice moments.
It's like in my family, when one person starts a story, then somebody interrupts them, and somebody else interrupts them,
exactly.
And somebody interrupts them. And then eventually the story finishes, but you've got 16 perspectives. That's how it's going.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that.
Exactly. And the other thing is that while, you know, some of the people are really extraordinary, you know, like, for example, Vladia's talent is, you know, is the reason I think CGE started and continued and stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, a lot of the things I'm able to see, and I hope that people are able to see, is that there's so many common things between all gamers, and it's, you know, the passion and the love and the dedication for the hobby. And I think that's something I'm hoping people can see, like, what defines, you know, a hardcore board gamer in the series, because I see all those little things in most of the people I know in the industry. So it's something that connects us all. And it's, you know, most of all, like, mm-hmm. the passion for what we do. So yeah, I think that's a commonality between everybody in our hobby.
Yeah, so you mentioned it a little bit. So I think a big part of a documentary is trying to convince the audience why they should care about what the documentary is talking about. So in your opinion, why should the audience care about what you're discussing?
Well, it's pretty obvious if you are a CG fan, if you want to know how these games are made, the games that you have played, and some of them might have brought you into the hobby even, and that's even more, you know, you become more nostalgic, I guess, thinking about those things. The second thing is because I think it gives you, you know, a behind the scenes look into the process of how board games are made, like what can be important challenges, how they can be done better. Later on in the later episodes, we see that, you know, the process is sort of improved. And the third thing that I think I mentioned already is, you know, I hope people can identify with the culture, the geek culture, in a way. I think mm-hmm. this is the sort of insights you'll see in the episodes. And I didn't want to use like numbers and, you know, facts and stuff from Board Game Geek or whatever. I wanted to use stories from people.
Well, we like stories here on the podcast. So absolutely, we appreciate that. But also, as an added thing, I really enjoyed seeing the first prototypes of some of these games.
Right.
Like, obviously I know what they are now, but it was cool to see the origins, especially as a budding game designer myself. And I know, Josh, you'd appreciate that as well. It's fun to see where it came from. And I thought what was most charming was seeing the original art. That was really interesting to see, like, his super accurate, but really charmingly well done stick figures, or his version of stick figures, right? Like they're basic in the way they are, but they have a charm and an elegance to them that really makes them playable and approachable right away, and in a way that most of us can't do. That's very, very
exactly
cool. So
yeah,
thank you
yeah,
for
yeah.
finding and sharing those things.
are you talking about Vladia, first of all, or
yeah,
or who? Okay. Yeah, yeah, no, because there's other designers also talking. But yeah, we have a lot of Vladia's games, and it's really cute. The first prototypes where he made the art on his own. And actually he says that because he spent so much time testing the games, he makes sure that, you know, it's at least art he likes. So he spends time on the art as well, so that he enjoys the game more while testing. So yeah, it was quite nice to see.
Completely understand that.
Yeah, it's really cool to talk to you about this kind of stuff, because in part, a lot of the reasons when me and Andrew were first discussing making this podcast, a big part of what our mission was is what your mission was, this documentary, to kind of give people a closer look, maybe a more intimate mm-hmm. look at the people in this industry. Because a lot of the time, I think the average gamer, for lack of a better term, doesn't see the people behind the company. They just mm-hmm. see the board games
exactly, yeah.
and the Kickstarter updates, and they either get mad or glad at those, whatever. But, you know, seeing that this is a living, breathing industry with people who have feelings, it mm-hmm. brings empathy, which is something I think the world extremely lacks nowadays.
Yeah.
So kudos to you.
Thank you. I hope you guys enjoy it. Yeah, it's a lot of other things I would like to have included, you know, but it would have taken me even more years, and, you know, it's not possible. But I hope that at least, you know, this feeling of why people in our hobby love games so much, I hope it's, you know, sort of visible.
So what's next? You have another documentary you're going to make? What's next for the future in this area?
Once I'm done with the series, we have 3 more episodes. The next thing I'm working on right now is sort of in the same line, is in line with this other video I did, How Board Games Are Made, which was a visit to the factory in Czech Republic, which makes cardboard stuff like boxes and punch boards and cards and everything. And I'm actually editing soon. I made a video about the story of, like, from prototyping to the table. So what happens, you know, in the various iterations. I talk with people in the company who make prototypes. This is their, you know, what they do. We have laser machines and the various different iterations in Kutná Hora. That was our latest release. And then all the challenges to sending them to the factory to print. And then I also went to the factory and showed, like, a little bit of the assembling process and the making there. So it's more like, you know, the trajectory of how games are sent to our table, in a way. If anybody's interested in that, I promise to make it short.
But my instruments are starting to go back and forth and start blinking. They're starting to do pop-ups and stuff like that. Let's go ahead into our pre-launch and talk about one game we've been playing recently.
The pre-launch. Get to know us and our guest.
So, in the pre-launch, we talked about one game we played recently and what we thought about it. I'll go ahead and kick this one off because I have a very short game, but a very interesting, for lack of a better term. This is 800-Pound Gorilla.
Ooh.
This is from Dolphin Hat Games. Mm-hmm. I love Dolphin Hat. They're one of my favorite party publishers. They do Taco Cat Goshi's Pizza, Steal the Bacon, and a whole bunch of other games that are just fun, really easy to pick up, very, you know, very low-level barrier entry type games.
Yeah.
Very affordable, too. Their games range from anywhere from, like, 10 to 20 bucks for each one, and they're always having great sales at the cons they're at. So I always pick up their latest game, which is 800-Pound Gorilla, which is a game that has a spinner in it that you flick, and it lands on a certain image, and based on what image it is, you do certain actions. Most of the time, it's going to involve the way the game is set up is that you have a bunch of cards that with gorillas on the back.
Yep.
And they're all different sizes, but they're very close together in size. And so you throw them out, you're trying to find, I believe, you're trying to find the heaviest gorilla so you can get a banana and stuff like that. And so you're really trying to look for which gorilla is the heaviest, and you flip and reveal at the same time. And whoever gets to a certain amount of bananas wins the game. There's a couple more rules beyond that. It's not too complicated. I gotta say, this isn't my favorite game they've done.
Okay.
By any means. I still really like Steal the Bacon the most. But this, for the production that they're giving me, and it's only 15 bucks, I'm extremely happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
this is yet another game I can bring to my family who's not into the majorly heavy games like I am, and just says like, hey, let's be gorillas and pound our chests for a little bit and just have a good time. It's fun. You know, they have like little coconuts in there, little, you know, foam bananas. It's cute. It's charming. If you are a big fan of Dolphin Hat games, it's more Dolphin Hat shenanigans. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're not, if you're like, I'm good with Tile Cat, probably not something I'm going to recommend. But if you like Dolphin Hat and you're a Dolphin Hat bro, go for it. But that's a 800-pound gorilla.
The one thing I like about that game is the micro differences. Like, really and truly, every card is just, like, it's millimeters of tininess difference, but it's there. So you can actually, like, really look and really study it, or you can just kind of go with your gut, which I think is kind of cool.
Well, it's the first time I hear about the 800-pound gorilla, and I'm looking it up at the moment. It looks a lot of fun. It reminds me of this other game. It was like, I don't know if you remember it. I haven't played it, but I've seen people, like, pictures playing, and it's about being a Neanderthal, and you have, like, a big stick.
Where Poetry for Neanderthals.
Yeah. I don't know if it's similar, but I would love to try out both. They look like a lot of fun. I was going to go talk about my pick, which is not a party game, but it's not a heavy game either. I've been playing the Battle of Versailles, or Versailles. I don't know how to pronounce it correctly.
Mm-hmm. Versailles.
Versailles. Oh, okay. I didn't know the actual English.
It's not that English. I'm just being dumb. It's Versailles in English.
Okay. Versailles. That sounds good. Which is a two-player game. And it sounds like you're going to, you know, fight a battle or anything, but it's actually about fashion. It takes this real show in 73 that was held in France. And it actually has, like, one player plays the France side, who was, like, very established in the fashion world back then, and the traditional power of fashion and stuff. And then the other side plays the US, who also was in, like, did a show there as well, a much shorter show. And they're trying to sort of gain some prestige from the French fashion with their new designs and stuff, like, and fresh ideas and so on. And that's based on the real shows that happened there, which I didn't know about, but I get to read in the rule book. But I love the fact that all the mechanics in this game are built around the theme. So I think there's a very nice marriage of, like, theme and mechanics. And it's a sort of light game. I mean, I think even non-gamers can play it. I mean, it would take them, like, one game to, you know, wrap their heads around some stuff, but it's not a difficult game to teach. It's also slightly asymmetrical. So because the two different shows had different duration, France has more actions than the US during the game. And the main thing in the game is that you have some tiles in front of you with the different actions, and there's a cardboard runway model that goes through them. And while it goes through the different tiles, you resolve the actions that are different from each side. And you have different goals. Each side has different goals. Some are common, but I love that it feels a lot like, you know, there's many different options. It can be very tactical. And it's sort of cutthroat, which I think sort of resembles the real cutthroat feeling in the fashion world, which, I mean, I don't know much about fashion, but I know this, that it's like a very cutthroat industry. And I think it's done beautifully. I really enjoy it. And I mean, I wish the theme attracted more guys. It's hard to get guys to play this game. They're not very interested in the theme. But I think it's really, really, really cool.
Well, you got me intrigued. I had not heard about this one, and I am now very interested. I actually think the art is actually quite pretty and interesting. Yeah, I love this asymmetrical thing, a two-player battle, and something that isn't really a battle. It's a battle of prestige, which I think is even cooler. So definitely on my list now. Thank you very much for bringing that to my attention.
Yeah, I'm down too. I like weird themes like this. Like that's, I'm all in favor of like fantasy game number 3472, but like things like this is what get me excited. Like someone's making an actual event like that actually happened in history and they're making a game out of it. And it's so niche. That's my jam.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. And I wish there were more, you know, new themes emerging because we get a lot of, you know, the same kind of stuff. You're an entrepreneur in, you know, medieval times and stuff like that. But yeah, I really like it.
Awesome. Andrew, bring us home.
So this is a game that I have long been searching for and trying to get a hold of, and it was out of print for a long time. This is Planet Unknown from Adam's Apple Games. It is the Lazy Susan polyomino drafting game. So essentially you are people terraforming a planet, drafting these polyomino tiles by choosing the one you want, and then you turn the Lazy Susan around, and then that determines what other players get as their pieces. So everybody gets the same, gets a piece of different shape on the same turn. You place it, and then how you place it determines what bonuses you get and different things like that. There's some chain reaction things going on. I really enjoyed it. I wouldn't say that it's my game of the year, but at the same time, I have played it once, and I feel like I need to play it again. I feel like I didn't play very well. I played against somebody who beat me up pretty solidly, but they knew what they were doing and I didn't, so that's not fair. But I didn't dislike the play. I did like how the game mechanisms worked. I did like the chaining of things. So count me in for two or three more of these. So yes, I liked Planet Unknown.
This was this won the Essenspiel Award, right, this year, I think.
It was nominated.
I was nominated. Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought it won.
Yeah. It did. I think Challengers beat it out.
Yes.
For the winning of, is it the Kennerspiel? That's the big, blah, blah, blah. it's the hobby one, whatever it's called. There's too many spiels. Because like there's the Kinderspiel and the Kennerspiel. I have a problem with the German language being that close together. It makes, but I'm not, that's not a conversation for right now. Yeah, it was nominated though. It just lost out to Challengers. I know that.
Okay, I thought it won. I'll check it out.
Bueno, we are all set to go. All the dials that did pop out are now pushed back in. And we're ready to dive into the story we have to share today. So let's go into it. Yeah. Well, that came out wrong. I'm going to have you take that, Andrew. I'm my southern accent's getting in the way. Go ahead.
Eleni, take us on a voyage. The helm is yours. Tell us a story or multiples.
I've actually said it a couple of times because people have asked me, why is my channel called Cardboard Rhino? And it's why I got the Rhino sort of nickname. And it was actually many, many years ago. I was playing Dixit with my friends. And, you know, in Dixit, you have to be very subtle. You don't want everybody to know exactly what you're insinuating. And I just cannot do that. They told me like, that I had the subtlety of a rhino, sort of, you know. And since then they call me baby rhino or rhino and stuff like for like a month. And it sort of stuck with me. I don't know. I kind of feel that way sometimes. I lack this skill, I think. But they're very cute animals as well. So, you know, I embraced my rhinohood after a while. And one last story that came to mind because it was sort of recent. And it ties in with a documentary thing I've been talking about. So I was in Czech Republic some months ago. And I was in Brno, which is another city, it's, you know, close to Prague, sort of. And I went there to film some stuff. And I met with Vladia and some other people at the gaming club that they have in Brno. And I was filming that a little bit. And then we're like, okay, let's play a game. And they opened like the big collection they have. And they took out Thurn and Taxes. I don't know if you know this game. It was the first time I played it. But then I knew that, you know, it was the 2006 Spiel des Jahres winner. I mean, a lot of people love this game. And yeah. Vladia told me he had played this game, I think, 200 times or something. It was like a game he has played a lot. And It was my first time. And I was so into it. And yeah, I love the game so much. I think I won. And the story is not to say I beat Vladia, is to say that, no. It's to say that they told me later that they loved this game so much, they played it so many times, that they actually went on a trip across Europe with only the map of this game in mind. Because the game is, you know, has the map of Germany and France and other cities. And they played it so much that they remembered the locations of all the cities. And they actually used this as their only map when they were road tripping in across Europe, which I found amazing. Like, this stuck with me so much about this game. And it's stories like that that I want to include in my documentary. And yeah, it's my favorite part.
I'm looking at the map right now, and as far as board game maps go, it's actually pretty good, but I don't know if I'd use it for accuracy what I'm looking at here. I mean, I famously, in my family, we play a lot of Ticket to Ride, and I taught the neighbors how to play, and the first thing she said, she looked at it, she's like, this map is not accurate. And I was like, well, don't pay attention to the accuracy of the map. Like, but, you know, at the same time, it's very interesting to, like, think of it as I got to go to this city and go to that city and going to follow the path to that. That's very cool. And, like, kind of make it like your personal checklist. Yeah, sounds like a very cool way to travel, actually.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree.
So are there any locations on that map that you wish you could visit?
Yeah, I would go to all of these. I mean, I know Budweiss has the, obviously, Budweiser there, the original. It's different from ours. Then you got Pilsen, which is now a neighborhood in Chicago. So I would go there. And then Nuremberg and Wurzburg and Stuttgart. I mean, just classic cities. And then there's Ulm. There's a board game about Ulm. I would go there and check that. So many cool places. Then you got Zurich in Switzerland and Basel. I'd like to go both of those. And Freiburg. Yeah, I would go to all these. I would use this as a checklist. That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
For the beer alone.
Exactly. Actually, I used to live in the Netherlands. So I was in Amsterdam for a couple of years. So I've been to a lot of places there. Yeah, I guess I would go to Frankfurt because for some reason, even though it's not objectively a pretty city, it has a very nice vibe. So I think I would visit Frankfurt for sure. And yeah, of course, Berlin is amazing.
So you've traveled a lot then around Europe and around the world. I'm assuming you've been to a lot of different places. What makes a place memorable for you? Is it the games? Is it the people? Is it the location? What makes it memorable?
I think it's mostly the people and some stories that have happened there, you know, and it's what you tell your friends when you come back, you know? I mean, yeah, it's, of course, if it's like really beautiful, it's enough a reason to visit, but then to go again, you know, you have to think about all the stories that happen that make you fall in love with a place.
I feel like when you travel also, it's a story in and of itself, right? You're experiencing, you're exploring, but I agree, any experience that you have depends upon the people you share it with. So obviously, if you have a significant other, that can make the experience even better. If you happen to bump into a stranger and have a nice night of drinking and storytelling, that becomes an experience that makes this experience better. If you find incredible food or get to explore new cultures, those are all things that all make a travel experience, for me, a memorable experience and something I want to come back to.
And sometimes, you know, it's quite nice to travel solo. I mean, I usually go with friends or like, you know, other people, but I've traveled solo once, and it was one of the most memorable travels. So I definitely recommend it to people because you get to see things very differently.
First, you're not encumbered by anybody else's wishes. You do whatever the hell you want. Exactly. It's a very interesting thing. I recently did this myself, too. I got to see what I wanted to see. I got to the art museum for as long as I wanted to be in the art museum, and that was really cool. but it also gets a little lonely unless you have a little bit of extrovert in you. You really got to make sure that you try to stop in at a pub and have a conversation and see who you can meet, or strike up a conversation in the street, or do something like that to really kind of ground you in the space and get to learn things. Or even if you just ask for a local food recommendation, find out a restaurant that isn't on your, you know, itinerary or your map already and go and experience that. So, but I definitely recommend traveling alone. It is a cool and interesting way of doing things.
Yeah, the idea is to be open to new things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're more open when you're alone. And I'm saying this because, you know, I've noticed when I go with other people, like I sometimes let them see the map and they lead me someplace and I have no idea where I am. I'm having fun, but it's not like I'm exploring 100%. So when you're alone, you take charge and, you know, it's quite a different experience. And you might meet new people and you have like more of a freedom to maybe follow them or, you know, share a drink or something.
Yeah.
So how have your travels and your experiences around the world affected the way you produce content today, whether it be for Carbo Rhino or CGE?
You know, I always try to include the location where I am. Like, for example, in my own channel, Carbo Rhino, I did some videos about playing summer games because I quite enjoy being at the beach in Greece. And then, you know, I always am one of those people who brings a lot of board games with me, even though people, you know, turn me down very often. I'm one of those who, you know, is trying to sell a game for the group to play. I quite enjoy, you know, fitting the game with the scenery. So maybe that's something I'm trying to do in my videos.
Okay, and what are some of your favorite pairings that you have found between games and scenery?
Mm.
The first thing that comes to mind is Air, Land, and Sea, because it's it's a game we take a lot at the beach because it's very easy to set up, and even if it's windy, you can use like some pebbles or something to keep the cards. I love games that have very few components for the beach. However, I remember we set up Undaunted once, and yeah, we had to use a lot of different stuff to keep the cards on the towel to remember other games. Yeah, maybe Scout. Yes, Scout is also another easy game to bring to the beach. Some Roller Rides also, it's good, like for if you're on the boat, because, you know, in Greece you have to ride a boat for many hours to go anywhere, really. So yeah, you need games for that. Yeah, I can't think of anything else right now, but I'm sure if you look at the summer videos I did, there are some good recommendations.
And so when you're trying to convince people to play games, then, like, you're trying to, you know, sell the game to a group that you're with, what games have you had the most success and bringing people into play?
That's a very good question. Well, the latest sell I did was with That's Not a Hat. It was very easy to convince people because it's like, you know, oh, it's about memory and it has two rules. So, you know, it was very easy to convince people. So yeah, the fewer the rules, the easier it is. Or it's very easy when you have some nice props, like, for example, Cash and Guns, if you know. It has this like really cool prop, foam guns that, you know, everybody's very curious what they do and so on. So that was a very easy sell as well. I haven't been able to sell sort of like heavier games because you know, it's very hard to... You need someone that is already committed and ready to, you know, commit the next hours into something that requires some thinking and attention and everything.
You're going to be open to it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, to kind of wrap up this conversation, bringing it all to a head, you're making content, you're traveling the world, doing all sorts of things, and now you're with CGE. Mm-hmm. What are the differences in the way you approach making content for CGE as opposed to your own channel, Cardboard Rhino? How do you? What are the differences, and You can say, which one do you like better?
That's a good question. One main difference is all the support and sort of like assets I have with CG, apart from like equipment and everything. I am inside a publisher, so there's a lot of different things I could talk about, and there's a lot of things that could inspire me. There's a lot of interesting people also I could, you know, have interviews with. So there's a bigger source of interesting things. And I was missing, like when I was working on my own, making videos, like I was missing being part of a group. So yeah, I really appreciate and enjoy that. But on the other hand, in order to make a video for CG, a lot of eyes have to watch what I've done, and then I have to make fixes and changes, and that's a much longer process. Whereas, you know, when I did my own things, I would just finish a video and like upload it, and it's, you know, it's up. Which I sort of, you know, miss in a way, and I'm trying to find the time to actually make videos for my channel. I hope this year I'll be able to do this, because I've been planning for it like many months. But yeah, it's similar content in a way, because, you know, I'm behind the editing and behind everything, but I feel that it's a richer world to be with a publisher. And I also have like really fancy cameras now that, like when we go to conventions, I have drones and like a lot of different things I can use, which I really, really enjoy.
What would you say to somebody who is a content creator? They make videos online and they look at your journey and they hear about it and they say, that's what I want to do. I want to do content for a big company. I want to have a great YouTube channel. What advice or wisdom would you give them as if they want to do that?
That's a very hard question, because as far as I know, I don't know any companies other than CG who have someone like me, right?
No.
Yeah. So.
That's good advice, though. Not many companies do it. That's good advice.
Well, I think that is the advice, is just do it. Just go ahead and start the process. Get the experience. Get practice. Do those kind of things.
Yeah, I would advise them to not count on something like that. But if they love the content creation, right, and the board games, they should make content irrespectively of, you know, if they're going to be paid by a company or not. And eventually they could approach some people that they really like. I mean, they have to work for people that, you know, they admire their work and they are similar in their approach and they like their games. So I would take it very slowly. I think there is no other way.
Awesome. Well, we are deep down in the CGEC and all that wonderful stuff we're seeing through the ages. Code names just float by the windows. Let's go ahead and put on our sonar and see what's happening in our future. On the sonar, we talk about one game we look forward to playing in the future. And since we're on a boat, because submarines are technically boats, I'm going to start off with the game called Sail, which is from Allplay. This is one of their newer trick-taking games that they are producing. It's a two-player cooperative trick-taking game. But basically, you are playing carts back and forth in order to progress a ship and not get attacked by a kraken. That's most of the extent I know about it. Beautiful artwork. I'm happy to it. I love all the trick-takers that Allplay has put out, and I love the small box line especially. So this is one I'm very much looking forward to. That is Sail. Eleni, you have a giant game that I hear a lot of people talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So how about you go ahead and talk about that?
Yeah, actually, yeah, I would love to play Stationfall. And actually, I don't know if it's technically cheating, but I have played once.
No, it's fine.
I sort of feel that I didn't explore everything that there is to explore. Because it's a really big game. It requires many hours to teach and play. And when we played, you know, it was figuring out things mostly. And it depends a lot of which characters are in the station. I don't know if you know what it is, but you're in a space station, which is going to self-destruct or something in 11 hours or so.
Okay.
So every round is an hour and you're trying to accomplish things in the time that you have secret goals, your identity is a secret, and everybody can move all the characters in the game. So they can move your character unless you reveal yourself and say, I'm this robot or this person or whatever, and then they will know what you're after. And each person has a different goal. It's a lot of different things you can do in the game, and it depends on which characters are in the game. So I'm hoping to play this again because there's a lot of different things. I think the best way to describe it is like sort of heavy gamers social game in a way.
Okay.
So it's a lot of fun. You know, there's like backstabbing, of course, and, you know, unexpected things happening. And it's cinematic in a way. It's like, it has some Nemesis sort of elements.
That's what I was comparing in my mind. So yeah, I can see that. And yeah. I have heard a lot of good things already about this one. So that's a great choice. I'm looking forward to playing Forest Shuffle. Anytime you got multi-use cards, count me in. And then on top of that, you add in little forest creatures and trees, and it's charming artwork as well. So yeah, I'm checking out Forest Shuffle soon.
Well, we're running out of oxygen because oxygen is expensive and we run on nuclear or Mountain Dew depending on the weekend. Let's go ahead and shoot up to the surface and we'll get you on your way. Well, thank you so much for bringing your presence to the submarine, our cardboard rhino, Elena.
Thank you.
If people want more of your content, what can they do?
More of my content. So they can check out CGE's channel on YouTube. They can check out my channel, Cardboard Rhino. And that's about it. maybe Instagram, but I'm more active on YouTube than Instagram. Yeah, and hopefully I'll have more content on my channel as well very soon.
Well, as always, listeners, thank you so much. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. My name is Josh.
I'm Andrew. And
Eleni.
And this has been the Tabletop Submarine.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to support the Tabletop Submarine podcast, please consider giving us 5 stars on iTunes and share this podcast with your friends, family, and other gamers in your life. See you on the next voyage.